Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its honorable court. Be seated, please. Case number 07-1737. FC Investment LLC et al.
Good morning. May it please the court, again, for the record, Alan Sternstein, counsel for plaintiffs below and appellants here. With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The plaintiffs challenged the district court's grant of defendant's motion to dismiss on personal jurisdiction grounds. In the trial court, plaintiffs based jurisdiction both on specific and general jurisdiction grounds. I'd like first to address specific jurisdiction. Plaintiffs maintain, first of all, that there were injuries caused within the District of Columbia by tortious acts outside of the District of Columbia on the part of the defendant. Whether it was done intentionally, as we believe, or negligently, IFX misrepresented Titan as a legitimate investment opportunity to the plaintiffs, as opposed to the fraud that it was. It did so through the PowerPoint presentation that was made actually in IFX's own offices in England, and also by calls by Mr. Cruden, who was authorized to solicit accounts and also represented as the head of Titan Managed Accounts, or rather IFX Managed Accounts, by phone calls from Mr. Cruden directed toward the district. And I think it's important to recognize that there were actions directed toward the district in addition to the PowerPoint.
Are there any cases that support the proposition that those types of contacts are sufficient?
Yes. The Ween case, which we cite in our briefs in the Fifth Circuit, deals with a situation in which there were...
Any here?
In this jurisdiction?
Yeah.
Not that I've been able to find here, although I would note that the district court, in a case related to this court, in which Mr. Lichtenstein, a director and counsel to Titan, his only contacts with the district were by telephone calls that involved misrepresentations and a fax that involved a misrepresentation. He was never here in the district, and Judge Collier in the district court, in a situation that we think is analogous in many ways jurisdictionally on the facts to this case, found without difficulty prior to the court's decision in this case.
You're talking about specific jurisdiction there, right?
I'm sorry?
Are you talking about specific jurisdiction at this point?
Yes, Your Honor.
Can I ask
do you raise that here in this court?
Yes, we did. It's, I believe our brief...
I thought you were relying on... Aren't you relying on A3 and A4 here?
Relying on A4, I believe, is the specific jurisdictional provision.
Right.
Did
you raise A4 in the district court?
We raised in the district court A4 by the terms by which argument.
Where did you raise A4 in the district court?
I believe it's on page 10 of the memorandum in opposition to the motion to dismiss. And I will acknowledge that A4 was not specifically mentioned.
That's what I thought.
But the language of that we're talking about, which is causing injury by in a jurisdiction by activities and conduct outside the jurisdiction, is the terms in which the argument is set. And the district court itself did choose to address A1 because it said it couldn't tell which provision of the long-arm statute was being relied on, and its view under A1 was A4 was manifestly inapplicable.
This is subsection B of your memorandum, is that right?
Below?
Yeah.
With the court's indulgence, let me just find it. I have it here.
I guess as an A4 claim, it doesn't seem to even make any effort at all to fit within the if clause of subsection four.
And didn't Judge Friedman decide it on A1?
He decided it on A1. But I'm reading now, it is under the heading, subheading that I see on page 10 of a memorandum is specific jurisdiction is proper because IFX official Cruden, who was never in the district, made contact with FCIG in the District of Columbia, which contacts gave rise to FCIG's injury. And then we state in the opening sentence there, it is well settled that defendant who causes injury to a plaintiff in the forum from acts directed to the forum subject the defendant to jurisdiction. And one of the cases that we cite is, in fact, the Wien case out of the Fifth Circuit, which is a case in which...
Can we just go back on that?
Sure.
If you're talking about A4, which you now appear to be talking about...
Right.
Then there's this rather lengthy if clause. If he regularly does or solicits business, engages in any other persistent course of conduct, etc.
Right.
And that section of your memorandum below didn't even pretend to satisfy that criterion.
I would respectfully disagree there. Part of what we argued in our memorandum below was that the website by IFX...
That was when you were arguing general jurisdiction.
But if that website...
when you go on to your specific jurisdiction claim,
right,
you have to assume you haven't won, or you may not win on your general jurisdiction claim. If you'd won on your general jurisdiction claim, fine. But you don't even have a sentence saying, well, the sorts of things we talk about in connection with general jurisdiction are enough to meet the arguably lesser standard of A4.
Certainly the argument that there is business is being done by virtue of this website.
I understand. You made that in connection with your general jurisdiction argument.
Specifically, no. But I think that the argument is actually made in the brief, or sufficient argument is made to satisfy that. I mean, this court itself has said that citation to the specific long arm provision being relied on isn't fatal to it. And I'd also point out,
but not making even a bow to the criteria that are set forth in the provision that's not cited is a more extreme problem.
I do believe we make a bow in the material that I just quoted from on page 10 of the memorandum. But even accepting that, we're stuck with A1 because that's what Judge Friedman thought was the provision applicable, although I think unjustifiably so.
But you don't challenge that.
Is that how you won in front of Judge Collier under A1?
That's correct.
Are you the same law firm? You are, right?
Same law firm, different lawyer.
All right. Where is that case now?
That case has been in the process of being settled.
Okay. All right. But so your firm won under A1 when you sued...
Sued Mr. Lichtenstein, who
Lichtenstein
was a
and his
right,
law firm.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. I see I'm in my rebuttal time. I would just want to note that if we're going to have to rely on A1, as Judge Henderson correctly points out, the situation factually with respect to Judge Henderson, with respect to Mr. Lichtenstein, and the situation we're talking about here is the same. We've got targeted solicitations, but never a visit or physical presence by either Titan. Well, actually not came into the district, but not Mr. Lichtenstein, who was the defendant there. Mr. Lichtenstein was never here, and in this circumstance, IFX made its phone calls here. So certainly under at least the decision in FCIG1, if you will, by Judge Collier, there was jurisdiction that you readily found under A1, and that should be found here.
Okay, Lichtenstein was a member of the board.
I'm sorry?
Lichtenstein was a member of the board of Titan.
Correct.
And Titan's agent, Knott, came into D.C., right?
Yes, but okay. This lawsuit was against Lichtenstein himself, not against Titan. And personal jurisdiction was found over Lichtenstein.
Well, one reason would be, I mean, I know what her order says, but Lichtenstein, as a member of the board of directors of Titan, even though Titan's not in the lawsuit, sends the agent not into, didn't not come into?
Yes, that's correct. And if we were talking about jurisdiction over Titan, I think that would be a significant factor. I think it's a significant factor here because of the conspiracy theory that we also allege that we were denied discovery on, as well as discovery on our general jurisdiction theory.
Why was that abuse of discretion to deny your discovery? Focus on the words abuse of discretion.
Yeah. We specifically alleged several grounds, or made a number of specific allegations regarding the existence of jurisdiction, or rather of a conspiracy. PowerPoint presentation, the very fact that the presentation occurred not in Titan's offices, but in IFX offices in London. The fact that our client's situation was not the only one. We alleged that there was a situation involving some defendants in Florida who experienced exactly the same thing, which shows a common plan. This court has held in the Edmund case that denial of discovery is an abuse of discretion where you allege conspiracy, and we didn't just generally allege it, where there's non-resident participation involved, and that's IFX, and an injury-causing act in D.C. And under the Edmund decision by this court, it's abuse of discretion to deny us discovery on those aspects of jurisdiction that would involve the conspiracy, as opposed to the website and the contacts by IFX with its website in the district. See, I'm completely out. If I could, I may be reserved 45 seconds unless the court has some
further
questions.
We'll give you some time. I just want to go through so I'm clear on this cast of characters. You've got a state court judgment up in Wisconsin against whom?
That was a lawsuit against Titan and Mr. Martinik, who is the owner of Titan, who, by the way, we believe was actually Mr. Knott.
Now is Titan still a fugitive from justice?
Mr. Martinik is the owner of Titan. So in effect, Titan is, yes.
All right, so you've got a state court judgment against him. You've got Judge Collier's, you're settling that suit.
Yes.
And that's against Lichtenstein and his law firm.
That's again, yes, essentially Lichtenstein, and jurisdiction personally found over Mr. Lichtenstein here.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Clancy?
Good morning, may it please the court. My name is Kevin Clancy, and I represent the defendant and the appellee here, IFX Markets Limited. Just to address a few of the points that came up during the appellant's argument, the issue of whether or not there was a tortious injury caused in the district was not specifically raised below. That argument is found on page 10 of the appellant's brief below, and it amounts to three sentences with a very long string cite, so it appears to be one page. It's transformed tremendously in this court. Four pages worth of argument in the appellant's reply brief. The situation is remarkably analogous to the Nemerium case, in which the plaintiff alleged in the district court below that jurisdiction could be based on bank account property existing in the district. They did not allege that there was any jurisdiction based on non-bank account property. The appellate or the district court presumed in that case that because there was no reference to any other property, that all of the property they were talking about was the bank account property. The plaintiff never challenged that presumption in the briefs or in a motion to reconsider after the decision was issued. The same thing happened here. The district court judge assumed that what plaintiff was talking about was A1, transacting business in the district. There wasn't any motion to reconsider based on that assumption. That's the same thing in Merriam, and the circuit court held that by that virtue, the argument was waived, so we would contend that it's waived here as well. In addition, the district court judge really had his hands tied in this case because as Judge Williams points out, there was nothing argued. There were no specific arguments made as to the plus factors. Those are the if factors. Is there an injury in the district is the first question. The next question is, have you engaged in a persistent course of conduct in the district, or have you regularly solicited business in the district? There were no arguments and there were no facts cited for that, so we would contend that that argument is waived. Yes, the RICO jurisdiction is, the plaintiff's attempt to use the RICO jurisdiction is rather expansive in this case. There is one case holding that if there are minimum contacts anywhere in the nation, that there is RICO jurisdiction. That case was 12 years before the most recent decision, and the most recent decision in that case on that issue held that there is not RICO jurisdiction unless a defendant in the case had minimum contacts with the district. Now, appellant contends
in other words,
that
the plaintiff must satisfy subsection A of 1965.
That's right. And the appellant contends that I'm...
B and C only come into play if the plaintiff has satisfied A.
That's right.
Is that the way to read this statute? Yeah.
That's the way I read it. Uh-huh. The appellant contends that I'm really reading too much into this term that a defendant has to have minimum contacts with the district. Rather, it should be any co-conspirator. Well, that's not what the case law says in the GTE case. The GTE case specifically says that those two sections must be read together in order to be coherent. That's section 1965A and 1965B. 1965A says, first, the statute gives personal jurisdiction over a defendant who transacts business or has minimum contacts with the district.
All right, and now we add this Cruden fellow, Christopher Cruden. Isn't he an IFX agent?
He is alleged to be an IFX agent, that's
all right.
Right.
All right, and didn't he come into D.C. with Nott?
No, it's very cleverly drafted, the complaint is. Chris Cruden is never alleged to have physically been in the district. What it says is not who came into the district invited Mr. Eisenberg to London along with Chris Cruden. It's cleverly drafted because it makes it look as though Chris Cruden is right here in the district inviting him to London. What it actually is saying is two people invited him to London. Mr. Knott invited him when he was here in the district, and Chris Cruden allegedly invited him over
right,
a telephone
so this
call.
This allegation that Cruden, quote, cultivated a relationship with Eisenberg, calling him on a regular basis in the District of Columbia to provide assurances about Titan, unquote, that's it. He didn't come into, I mean,
that's
you're
it.
Saying his allegation is does not bring him into the district with Knott.
Right. That is all that is alleged. And I would point out that what's different between this case and the Lichtenstein case is that Mr. Lichtenstein is alleged to have made 10 telephone calls specifically and sent a fax to Mr. Eisenberg in the district with a telephone number that begins with a 202 area code. And the judge found that significant because that gave notice to Mr. Lichtenstein, you're doing business with the District of Columbia. Anybody knows that. In addition to that, he sent the allegedly fraudulent deposit slip into the district. Those are different facts. The only thing that's alleged here that Mr. Cruden did, and this is the linchpin, this sentence here is why the appellant wants a United Kingdom corporation to have to defend itself in the District of Columbia. Cruden developed a relationship with Eisenberg and called him regularly. Called him where? Called him when? What did they say during the telephone calls? None of that is alleged. As you point out, Judge Henderson, it is the same law firm that represents the plaintiff in the Lichtenstein case, and the allegations are much more specific. This is information that's in their control, but it's not anywhere in our complaint for the district judge.
Where else would he have called it? The plaintiff, Eisenberg.
But I suppose he could have called him, FCIG is a Maryland corporation. He could have called him anywhere. It's certainly possible that he called him here in the district. But what we don't know is how many times did he call him? What did they say to offer assurances? The allegations are more specific in the Lichtenstein case.
Okay, but in the Lichtenstein case, she doesn't talk about Kruven. Is that right?
That's right.
She's talking about Lichtenstein himself. And
right.
Right.
And the specific allegations of his telephone calls and his fax and his sending a deposit slip into the district. The principal argument that I'll address just briefly, the principal argument that appellants rely on here is that there is general jurisdiction based on the IFX website. And I'd like to point out that the leading case on jurisdiction based on website, Gorman versus Ameritrade, is importantly different than the facts that we have here. In that website, anybody sitting at their computer anywhere can log on to the Ameritrade website, open an account, fund an account, and begin trading their account without leaving their desk in a matter of a few keystrokes. The IFX website is decidedly less active. In fact, it's what I would call a restricted website.
Is it any less active other than that to gain access to it, you have to file an application? In other words, once you've filed your application on paper, isn't it exactly the same?
It is very similar once you're up and running.
How about exactly the same? Well, there really isn't any difference, is there?
Well,
once you're on it.
You can't fund it immediately. It has to be funded after the account is open. But,
right.
If there were the volume of users in the District of Columbia after they'd overcome the threshold, then it would be like Ameritrade.
If there were this volume of users and the appellant here relies on this hypothetical that perhaps there are, we submitted an affidavit saying that there was one user in the district who had the account open for a few months and did very little, if any, trading. But appellant hypothesizes that there are any number of people who live in Maryland or Virginia who may come into the district. Two points in that regard. One, that situation is not unique as the appellant contends. The judges here on this panel know that in Chicago, people commute from Northwest Indiana, and some unfortunate souls even commute from Wisconsin these days. In New York, they commute from New Jersey and Connecticut. In Boston, they commute from Rhode Island and New Hampshire. In Philadelphia, it's New Jersey and Delaware. If the second point there is, if a resident of Virginia could take his laptop computer and use it as a jurisdictional wand and create jurisdiction wherever he traveled throughout the country, there wouldn't be a constitutional test, litmus test for jurisdiction. That's unilateral activity. IFX isn't doing anything with somebody in the district. That person is coming to the district and saying, you're here too, IFX, because I say so. I see I'm out of time, and I thank you for indulging me, and I would ask the court to affirm the district court decision.
All right, thank you. Mr. Sternstein, why don't you take 1 minute?
Just four things. In the Numerian case that counsel cited, the district court there didn't even address the specific subsection involved. In this case, the district court addressed Section A1 and said it's manifestly inapplicable. There would have been no reason to go back and talk about a motion for reconsideration at that point, particularly when we believe that in substance A4 was argued. Or rather, the district court said that A4 was manifestly inapplicable to this case. I believe I stated very clearly in my opening remarks that Mr. Cruden only made phone calls into the district, despite what the allegations in the complaint may suggest. And those phone calls themselves are sufficient where you're targeting tortious conduct toward a jurisdiction under the Wynn case, under Judge Collier's decision. And I would also ask the court to take a look at the O'Connor decision, which came down by the Third Circuit, 496 Fed 3rd 312. Just targeted solicitations, not even injury in Pennsylvania where the suit was bought. Let's, you know, not lose sight of the forest for the trees. IFX is saying to you here it can mislead plaintiffs, not just here, but in its own offices overseas. It did the misleading here by Cruden's phone calls overseas by the PowerPoint. Induce plaintiffs to then direct their money or send their money to someone who is actually a thief, and then be free from having to answer in this jurisdiction for the wrongs it committed. At the very least, there should be specific jurisdiction in this district. And I thank the court for its indulgence in time.
Thank you.